listener production.
Howdy, you are listening to episode 157 of the Howie Games Part B featuring the multi-talented Erin Phillips. Proceed.
You talked about, and any time I speak to anyone that's been through the American system, Ben Graham blew me away.
Yep.
And Liam Hendricks of baseball that came on recently about you can be onto the game one day and then you can be off to another team. Mm. So what does this mean? So you get traded from Connecticut Sun, but you signed with Seattle, but then got traded on to Indiana. So you didn't, did you even go to Seattle?
No. I didn't even get a look in Seattle. So
Connecticut just say, right, we're done with you here.
Yeah. So what had happened was Connecticut actually, I became a free agent. And so I decided to sign with Seattle. I wanted to play under Sue Bird as a backup point guard there. And I thought, what an incredible experience. I get to play with Lauren. And so I thought, beauty, yep, I signed with Seattle. Well, then a trade came up with one of the greats over there, Katie Smith, who wanted to go back to Seattle also and play for Brian Agler, who was the coach there. And so I was a part of a trade to get her, which in her right, she's one of the greatest scorers of all time. So for me, it wasn't a, I didn't feel any hard feelings. You know, if you're involved in a trade with Katie Smith, it's kind of almost an honour. And so it was a decision for me whether to go to Chicago, Indiana, and I decided to choose Indiana and to go there and play. And lucky I did because 2 years later we were
the champs. You won the whole thing. Can I ask you, I don't know if it's public record, so at this stage we're talking 2011 – I'm just going to ask you, how much are you getting paid to play professional basketball and how long does the season run? Like, what's the length of time commitment and the payment to play for Indiana Fever?
So we're basically there through May through till middle of September, and then if you make the finals and playoffs, you could be there till early October.
So half a year, 5-6 months.
Yep, and so depending on obviously salary caps, like A rookie salary would start anywhere from like $60,000 right up until about $100,000 at that year, US.
Okay.
And so I had signed, I reckon my salary with Indiana Fever was roughly around the 80s.
Okay.
Right middle of the road, and you know, $80,000 for 6 months. It's a good, a good wicket when you convert it back to Australian. Yep.
Is a club looking after you outside of that, or do you have to pay for accommodation? And
no,
all that
so
stuff?
Like you, that's your salary. They take care of accommodation, cars, travel,
so you're treated
hotel.
Really well,
yeah.
Sounds
so basically,
like.
And you get per diem on the road. So really, you could live off your per diem if you really wanted to. But it was a good salary, and that was literally your whole life. You woke up in the morning, you go off to training. You come home, that's all you focus on. There's nothing.
So it is a full-time job.
It is a full-time job. Yep. No one did anything else. My teammates, none of them had studies. It was literally you're there for one thing, and that was basketball and basketball only.
I see the NBA, and it's trash talking left, right and centre. Is there trash talking in the WNBA?
There is. I wouldn't say as much as the NBA.
So do you dish it out or did you just cop it as the little Australian?
I definitely don't dish it out. I don't have any good ones.
Okay.
I'm not that witty with one-liners, but I remember one of my opponents, she was like she was a really good basketball player, but she would talk in herself in the third person and she'd be saying, she needs to get the ball, and she would use her name. And I think I turned around to her and I said, well, she needs to tell this person that she needs to shut up and stop talking to herself in the third person. And I got the most evil eyes and that was it. I was like, okay, I'm not going to say anything anymore. She's about to take my head off. But you come across some opponents that, oh, they love to dish it out and they thrive off of it and it's literally the whole game. But I suppose like Lauren, like typical Australians, like, we didn't talk trash over there.
No.
We had a really good reputation because of Michelle Timms and Spawny and Brogan and those names that played over there. We had a good reputation as Australians, and we took pride when we were over there playing, and we wanted to keep that reputation going so that more Australians would get drafted.
So you won a title with Indiana with a fever. What does that mean to the people of Indiana? Are you walking down the street and the occasional person knows who you are? Everybody knows who you are. Like, where do you fit into the Indiana community? And then being a championship winner, what does it mean to those people?
Well, definitely if you go into downtown Indianapolis where the arena is,
yep.
Like, people know who you are because there's banners up around of the Fever team, and that's where we trained and played. So you would get recognised as a Fever player. And as soon as I opened my mouth and it was an Australian accent, people would put, you know, two and two together, say, oh, do you play for the Fever? You're that Australian girl, you know, kind
and
of
And is there love for you?
Oh, yeah. They absolutely, and especially in Indiana, which is such a big basketball city, they just adored the Fever and they adore their Pacers, and it's, for some of them, it's their, you know, their life. Their basketball team is their life.
How about the busy week here too? You had 18,000 the other night here, 13,000 at the Pacers preseason game last night, 60-some thousand whatever at the Colts game today, 18 again tonight, and they got a Future Farmers of America tomorrow. Good morning.
And so we were so embraced. I think the other teams that I played for, the biggest cities, because you're such a little fish in a massive pond, yep. Especially in LA, like, it's, you're not as well recognized, but the smaller cities, yeah, you are very recognized, and people literally just want to go out of their way and talk to you and, you know, praise you for playing a sport, which is, yeah, really cool.
So you won a second title with Phoenix. I want to speak to you about some of the other places you went and played, because I'm fascinated.
Okay.
The globe fascinates me. But did you have a period, Aaron, where, and I know, as you said at the start, you're still playing, but did you ever sit and think after you'd won a title with the Fever or with the Mercury that you're a girl from Australia that's only playing basketball because you couldn't play footy, there you are on the other side of the world getting paid a salary that most female athletes in Australia would go, wow, at, and that you're a two-time WNBA champion. Do you have those moments when you're amongst it? Because it's a remarkable achievement.
Oh, absolutely. Because really there was no, you know, besides, I suppose, tennis, there's no sport really in Australia where you could be a female athlete and do it full-time. And so I was always just pinching myself going, well, like, what a life, you know. I hope this lasts forever. You know, I'd love to do this forever. But, I just remember always, you know, when I'd speak to my mum or dad, and especially dad, he's just like, don't take it for granted. You know, your career is so short-lived, and try to enjoy it and make the most of it. And he's right. It just goes so quick. And to have that taste to know what it feels like to be female and to have a full-time profession as an athlete was just mind-blowing, because, yeah, it wasn't something I ever thought I would, you know, have the opportunity to do.
So on the side of playing in the WNBA, you're just taking side trips here from what I can see. You're just stamping your passport. I'm going to put you on the spot. You might not be able to do this.
Okay.
But give me a story, long, short, doesn't matter, something that sticks in your mind from 2008 and 9 playing basketball in Israel. Where was your team in Israel?
In just outside of Tel Aviv in Ramat HaSharon.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what was the team? What are they called?
We were Electra.
Okay.
I think it was like electricity. I'm assuming that's in Hebrew.
Righto, so your Hebrew is not that sharp, but that's okay, because either's mine.
No,
so
terrible.
Tell me something about playing basketball in Israel.
Well, Israel is my second favourite place to visit in the whole wide world. The most incredible, incredible country, and I absolutely loved it. It's the most unique, incredible city. It was a league similar to the WNBL in terms of, like, you just play one game a week. And amongst that, you train, but you have quite a few afternoons or days off. And so I was always traveling.
Yes.
So my days off, I'd go out to the old town. I'd go to the old city I'd go out to the Dead Sea and float.
Oh, float
out in there.
How salty is that salt?
Incredible.
It just gets in every part, your eyes, your ears.
Oof. Like there is mud baths next to this Dead Sea, and my high recommendation is don't exfoliate too much prior to getting into the salt.
Right.
It burns.
Yeah.
Right. Mad mistake. And just the food was incredible.
How's the hummus?
Oh my God. It's
people,
so
like people
good.
Say, oh yeah, it's hummus, but it's
no, it's
Israeli
more than that.
Hummus is your next level hummus.
Yes, but you know what? You come back to here and you're like everything, like your Coles hummus and Woolies hummus
doesn't
is terrible.
Stack up. Doesn't
terrible.
Stack up, does it? It's because it's got canola oil rather than olive oil in it.
Is that the, is
this
that
is
reason?
The thing? This
Thank
is
you
the
for
thing.
Telling me
well,
that.
Well, this is what I've been told.
And honestly, it was I loved that country and it was just incredible, and one of the most fascinating places in the whole wide world.
And what do they make of a blonde Australian from Adelaide?
Well, I just was part of the furniture. I just like
you were just there to play ball.
I just fit in, and I had wonderful teammates who would. I had two other foreigners as well. I had two American girls I was playing with there as well, and so we spent a lot of time with our team. We'd go over to their houses for dinner with their family, for their family dinners, which they do like so extravagantly and make you feel really welcome. And the only time that I was really like, wow, you know, reminded of, I suppose, Israel and some of the other
issues
that they have is when the bomb sirens went off, and that happened, and I was actually home in my apartment alone, and I got onto the phone with one of my teammates and they're like, oh, I don't think it's serious, you'll be fine.
It's either serious or not.
Exactly.
I think it's like being pregnant or not pregnant.
I was like, isn't that a siren for an air raid? And she's like, oh, I think you'll be okay. I don't think it's, you know, the real thing. So
okay, so that's Israel.
That's Israel.
And then you're a triple champion. People might not realise this. In Poland.
Jeszcze nowa wstawka gry agresywnej w obronie, ależ to była akcja. Ale to właśnie grozi takimi.
So where were you in Poland? I haven't been to Poland, so I'm a bit sketchy here. Were you in Warsaw or where were you?
So my first year I was right up north in Gdansk.
And what was the name of
that? In Gdynia. Lotus, Gdynia.
Right. That's a sort of shipbuilding country up there, isn't it?
It is. It's on the Baltic Sea.
Right.
And very cold.
Right.
Like one of the coldest parts of Poland because of that.
How cold are we talking here?
We got down to minus, I think may have hit minus 30, but there was a lot of minus 20s. I remember looking at the phone going, oh, my gosh, it's really cold out there today.
How did you deal with that? How did you deal with that?
You know, for the very first time I went to Poland, I had never experienced snow in my life. And so Poland will introduce you to snow really well.
Yeah.
And they give you a car. So when you go over to play in these teams, you get an apartment, a car, and you make your way to training. And it had snowed for the very first time. And I had, like I said, I'd never experienced snow. I didn't even think twice about how hard it would be to drive in snow. I mean, surely you just drive, right?
Surely.
Well, apparently you need to have snow tyres.
Apparently.
And so when I went to training, it had snowed quite heavily. The roads were pretty icy, and I was coming out of my neighbourhood probably a little bit quicker than I should, even though I wasn't going too fast, but the roads were icy. And it was the snow plough had been through to clear the roads, and so there was a barrier of snow, like a snow wall. And I'd come around the corner, and it was like, you know, the cartoons when the car slides into the snow wall and it's just the outline of the car?
Yep.
That's kind of what I did. And then I had to call the manager to help me get my car out of pile of snow.
That's Poland. But wait, there's more, because then you went and played. Now, I love the name of this. In 2014-15, the Slovak League, which I presume is in Slovakia.
Mm-hmm. 8 секунд остается. Барбара в углу Стехлякову находит. И еще одна треха. Нет, Семен Авинов показывает заступ. Был небольшой, тем не менее.
And you played for the Good Angels.
Yeah.
Yes. I want to know about the Good Angels.
Well, that was a better team than the Bad Angels.
Right. What colour did the Good Angels roll in?
The Good Angels were West Coast colours, blue and yellow.
West Coast, right.
Yep.
And where were you based in Slovakia?
In Slovakia, I think in, what was the town? Košice.
Okay, you're looking at me like I would know the answer to that.
Yes.
Okay. And tell me about Slovakia?
You know, Slovakia was very similar, I found, to Poland. Again, I was there in the winter, very cold. But I loved, you know, there's something really beautiful living in Europe and in the wintertime, and especially coming towards Christmas. They do beautiful, you know, markets outside and open fires and little stalls where there's like a lot of handmade crafts and it's not a you know, expensive country to live in, but people are just really genuine, want to help you and they know you're not from there and even more so they want to help you get around you know, it's always fun when you're in a country for the very first time. You don't, you know, obviously speak the language, but you're trying to translate through hand gestures or pointing or, you know, it's an experience. And I'm very lucky to have lived in some pretty incredible countries and still have friends that are over there that I would go back and visit.
Well, it's quite remarkable, isn't it? Like we've rolled off Israel, Poland, America, Slovakia, like to play a sport you love. Like, it's extraordinary. You're 2008. So I noticed you've got the Olympic rings on your. See, this is what I'm trying to explain to people. This lady in the nicest possible way is a freak in the world of sport. So 2008. You get a silver medal in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
The Olympics.
Yep.
Is that how good is that? That's such a wonderful achievement, or is that the Americans beat us, and we didn't get gold?
I think it's both. I think obviously you want to go into any tournament and win a gold medal. But, I mean, America was just, they were just too good at the time. And it was the most incredible experience. It was my first Olympics in Beijing and the experience of the athletes' village, you know, to be able to live in a village. It actually just blows my mind thinking about it when I look back. Literally a village where the best athletes from all around the world in all sports are living, obviously besides the dream team in basketball that live outside of the village. But like to have the best of the best literally living together, it's just fascinating. It's hard to kind of wrap your head around. Like you would literally, you know, you walk from your building. How it kind of works is each country would get a building. Australia typically had, well, when I was in Beijing, we had two buildings of apartment blocks and your flags hanging outside of the building blocks. So, you know, Team Australia live there, you know, Team China live there, or, you know, all the countries have all their flags hanging outside of their windows representing. And it's amazing. And just to walk from your apartment block to the dining hall, and the dining hall is just another next level place.
What was your food that you looked at, thought, oh, geez, I'd like to go into that, but it's the Olympics?
Literally, there's everything of everything.
Right.
Every kind of type of food that you can, like, think of. And then on the end of it is a huge McDonald's, which at the start of an Olympic campaign, not too many people, you know, they've got skin folds to watch.
But as time goes on,
the administrators, you know, the coaches might, you know, sneak over there when the athletes are done eating their, you know, salads and pastas and whatever. The end of the Olympics, that line is snaked, right? Nobody cares about their skin folds or what they look like or their performance. It's all done, and that McDonald's is the most popular place in all of Beijing.
So have you got a memory from that, of an athlete that you saw on your travels around the village or when you were having your meals that you were just, wow?
Oh, like, yes. We would have, I know Usain Bolt was one who actually just recently in Rio who I saw, and he was just one. He just embraced everybody. He loved being in the village. He loved the attention, and he just was a guy that he's a big, powerful guy, the fastest man on the planet, you know, all the hype around him, and he was just, he was amazing to meet. But literally you walk around and you walk past somebody and you go, oh, my God, was that? And, you know, you go, oh, yeah, maybe that was, you know, Michael Phelps, or that was,
wow,
you know, whoever. Like it was just like there was always somebody every day that you'd walk, because they'd have literally a gym inside the village as well, and recovery centers, and you would always see somebody and just go, oh my God, that was that person or that person. Like, and it was mind-blowing. It was literally, like they say, another world. It was another world.
That conversation we started and you said tall fellas get paid more. Imagine the value of Usain Bolt.
Oh my gosh. It would break the internet.
Imagine the value of Usain Bolt.
Back to Erin shortly. One of Erin's former teammates on the Aussie women's basketball team, the Opals, has recently announced a comeback, Lauren Jackson. Lauren is a superstar, a great of the game. She is also a very resilient person who hasn't always had things easy.
You know, when I was young, I think I for whatever reason, I had really bad separation anxiety. So, like, on junior teams, under 12s, under 14s, if my mum wasn't with me or my dad, I wouldn't be able to perform. So there'd be times when I'd been picked on a Riverina team or we're going to state championships or whatever, and mum and dad couldn't get off work, so we were being billeted out. And, I mean, I couldn't breathe. Being in somebody else's house and doing it that way, I could not function normally. And, like, it's hard to sort of look back on it. But, you don't talk about those sort of things. Well, you didn't back in those days. And I just did not want anyone to think that I was going through anything other than just toughness.
That's Lauren Jackson on episode 99 of the show. Episode 99. Check it out. Alrighty, let's get back to Erin.
We need to talk about footy. I just, this is probably what I didn't fully understand. So the AFLW starts in 2017, right? So you were on the roster of the Dallas Wings at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, again, I'm going to ask you, like, what would you have been getting paid at Dallas at that point?
I think roughly my salary was about 110.
And what are you getting paid in the first year at the Crows?
Well, my rookie salary was, I think it was like $8,000.
Right. What? So that is a fair punt.
Salary for salary,
right,
yeah.
That's a fair punt. Mm-hmm. So I just want to explain to people here, because I read this. So the first season of AFLW, you won the premiership. You won the league best and fairest. You also won best on ground in the grand final. You won the goal of the year for your 55-metre bomb against Carlton in round three.
Oh, somehow, luck's a fortune. Bombing it long. How will it bounce? It's going to be a goal! Magical stuff by the co-captain, Erin Fowles. That's as good as it gets.
And in the grand final, you had 28 touches, of which Adelaide kicked two goals in the second half, and you kicked them both.
Phillips, can she get some space? She can, and she goals! Phillips stayed back, did the Bradbury, and kicked the goal!
That is extraordinary. Yeah. You're a very modest lady, but I was reading through this last night and it hit me how good you were then at football. What was the first season of AFLW like, apart from an extremely dominant, like, I don't think anyone else won an award. Like, someone else might have got the coach's award, I don't know, but you might have snaffled that as well. I'm not too sure. Most improved, maybe someone else got a look in, but you probably got that as well. And how long since you'd played footy?
It was 17 years.
17 years. Like, did you have the occasional kick?
Yes, yeah, a few kicks, but no, I hadn't obviously played any real games.
Right. But yeah, you're a bit rusty early. You got three votes in the first game and three votes in the second game, so you really struggled out of the blocks.
I obviously was still an athlete. I was playing basketball, and my brother-in-law, Sean Burgoyne, who was playing for – he played for Port Power and then finished
just dropped that in, just a Hawthorn-Port Adelaide champion.
Well, I was kind of living my football career through him. You know, I was watching his games. I'd be overseas.
So he's married to one of your sisters?
Married to my middle sister.
Right. So, and you're just watching him win premierships for the Mighty Hawks.
Yeah, and kind of watching him live out, you know, my dream of playing AFL. And so I stayed involved in the game from a spectator point of view, and I felt like I never was really away from the game fully. I'd always, you know, stayed a part of it, followed it. And so when AFLW came around for me, I actually asked Sean, which boots should I get? Because I was like, what do you wear? Because you get a kick or two.
Seems to work for you 400 plus times.
He gave me some Pumas out of his allotment, I think, that he gets from his sponsorship, so that I could wore some boots, and yeah, I had a kick with my dad out the front. It was the day before training. I'd got Dad out into the road. I said, "Dad, we need to have a few kicks because I haven't kicked
on
ball
the road
on the street."
I love and it.
We kicked the ball for maybe, I don't know, an hour, just having a kick.
How's the old boy moving?
Not too well now. He needs a couple of new knees.
Right. And how are you moving?
Still a lot better than him. If I ever get close to him, I'm done. But yeah, I just started having a kick, and then I went out to the very first training with the Crows, and I remember walking out onto the oval, and this was, we were training at, it was ironic, but we're at the old footy park where I was that young kid hanging over the fence, and I remember standing on the boundary looking out at this oval going, oh my God, it is so much bigger than on the TV, and like from a, in the grandstand, like it's a bigger than, there's a lot of basketball courts that could fit on this oval.
A lot of running.
And I really struggled with the aerobic capacity. These girls were able to, you know, run and run, and I was from a sport that was so stop-start. So that was a massive change for my engine, my short little engine.
So did you have to start increasing your aerobic capacity to switch from basketball to footy? Yeah.
I was struggling to run a lap around the oval, like a decent, you know, decent run around the oval. I was like blowing up.
Right, because yours is just sprint, 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 isn't it, I guess?
So the repeat efforts were my strength, but this long distance was really hard. But it was, you know, it was incredible because there we were, inaugural year, first team, you know, Adelaide Footy Club, all these girls were together, so excited, you know, the first year, had a pre-season done, and it was time for the round one game, which was at Theberton, and running out on Therby Oval, we played GWS and having a fantastic crowd at the game. And I remember looking when I was running out as we were, you know, running onto the field, looking out to the crowd and seeing these young girls wearing Crows colours, just like, you know, I'm sure we all were when we were little. I know I was. And just to see that, I just knew that no matter what happened, this was just the most incredible thing to ever happen, and to be a part of it, and for us to be a part of it, was just insane. It was so good.
So game two of the opening weekend, and a big moment for South Australian footy. We're away from Theberton Oval and a free.
And then at the end of that season, to be able to run around and hold the cup up and not be just on your dad's shoulders, but be on your own incredible journey.
And to be able to do it and take my kids, who were babies at the time, onto the oval, which was something I got to experience with my dad, to be able to then take my kids onto the oval, and like I couldn't have written the script any better to be able to have that opportunity. And like I said, I'm very grateful, and for the 6 years, and you know, have winning three premierships, it's just, like I can't write the script better for me. And like I said before, there's even though football wasn't around when I was 13, and although it should have been, and I wish it was to a degree, I don't have any regrets because of the experiences that I've been able to have.
Well, you're not playing basketball in Israel. If there was a football path, you're not playing basketball in Poland, are you? That's just not going to happen. To me, it sounds like you got the best of both worlds. 2019 grand final versus Carlton. I'll read you the number. You can tell me what it means to you. 53,034.
History. It was...
At that stage, a record for the standalone women's sporting event in Australia. I presume it was only beaten by the Women's World Cup final a couple of years later. Mm. What was it like running out in front of 50,000-plus people?
Well, here come the Crows. There is Phillips with her twins, Brooklyn and also Blake. Let's just take in the crowd right now. Amazing.
Oh, it was mind-blowing.
Was it?
It was spine-tingling. I remember I was warming up because you have a couple of warm-ups when you play footy, and I remember kicking for goal and picking out a chair in the second level that, you know, I'm just going to practice goal kicking. I aim for that chair, and the next time I came out and I tried to find my chair, it was filled with people. I was like, where is this chair? You know, and like I kept looking around and more people were just entering Adelaide Oval, and by the start of the game, literally the third tier, there was people in there, and I was just blown away. And then I had to, you know, you switch off and you go into game mode, and but it was just the most amazing experience.
What was the crowd influence when you were playing the game? Because I guess as players you weren't experienced, used to that level of noise when you're trying to actually do your job.
Yeah, well, I've been lucky enough to play in front of some pretty good crowds.
Yeah, that you was, had.
But that, like, even for me, I was still quite blown away, and it was just an incredible feeling, because even though I had played in front of crowds, it was in an inside arena, so naturally loud typically. The Adelaide Oval with 50,000 plus people, it was so loud. I didn't think it could get that loud. And as a player, to experience that was incredible. And it just made you, I don't know, I just felt like it lifted us off the ground. It was incredible. And we knew it was bigger than just that game. It was bigger than just the grand final of 2019. You know, people had shown up and turned up to support women's sport, not just the Crows and Carlton Football Club. It was more than that, and we knew that we were part of something pretty historic. And even, you know, I've spoken to some of the Carlton girls, you know, to have, even though they were on the, you know, losing end of that game, they were part of something incredible, and that's something that is still special to them.
The result that day, a convincing win. 63-18. So it was over. Now, once again, funnily enough, Erin got best on ground. So two grand finals in a row that you played in, you got best on ground. But even more extraordinarily than that, you got best on ground, yet you did your knee in the third quarter.
Wilson, the switch. Nervous moment here for Stevens, does well. And Phillips has gone down, clutching her knee as well. Erin Phillips on the turn has gone down.
One of the best players in the competition, straight down, grabbing at that left knee. So this would be devastation for the Adelaide Football Club. She's dominated the competition.
How far into the third quarter?
I think it was maybe 5 or 10 minutes into the third quarter.
Okay, so you basically haven't played half the game and you still got best on ground. I just want people to understand the sense of achievement here. But you did your knee and you'd had knee issues in the past. Tell me about the life of a professional athlete. That we've gone through a lot of positives and wins here. What's it like when you are injured and you can't do what you want to do and you're in pain and you're not sure, I presume at that stage, whether you can come back and play again, etc. How does Erin Phillips deal with that?
That was incredibly high emotions running through my mind when I went down. That change of direction, as soon as I had planted my left leg and tried to change direction, I heard a loud crack and it was instant pain pretty much.
Because it looked a bit innocuous, like it wasn't in a tackle, you're on your own, off on the way though, mind you.
Yeah, and it was exactly pretty close the same as I did my other knee. This was back in 2007. Yep. So I was familiar with knees and ACLs, and so I knew that I'd done my knee. Actually, initially I thought I'd, because of the sound of how loud it was, I initially thought I'd broken like my leg or... And the pain was excruciating.
So you could really hear the pop.
Yeah, it was loud this time. And so, yeah, it was like every emotion hit me. And you kind of, all these thoughts rush into your head, right? It's the grand final. Are we winning? I've just done my knee. Oh my God, I can't play anymore. What's the score? Like, are we going to win? You know, am I ever going to play again? Like all these kind of thoughts just run through your mind, and then I kind of just settled, and I just remember just being just shattered and just knowing that obviously I wasn't going to take part in the game anymore, and the fact that I know what kind of rehab was ahead. My wife was pregnant with our third child. I had twins that were just over 3 years old, and I knew that I would be kind of useless for them as a mum whilst rehabbing a knee. And yeah, it was just, you know, a highly emotional time. And as I was getting carried off on the cart down to the change rooms, I was just little different like thoughts of, is this the last time you're going to play, how are you going to get through this? I had to go back to Dallas and coach for the Dallas Wings. How am I going to stand? Like, how am I going to rehab a knee and stand and be a coach with one leg? And I kind of just tried to just gather my thoughts and kind of breathe. And it was a really nice moment coming off the ground and having my teammates, the Carlton girls, you know, come and pat me on the back or shake my hand. Yeah, in the middle of it. And, you know, so that was pretty incredible. And, yeah, I remember getting down into the rooms, into the doctor's room, and just I was just bawling my eyes out because I didn't want to go through it. You know, I was just like, this is bloody hard, and I just wanted to get, and I wanted to get back on the field, and this is a grand final, and you know, and got back out there on crutches and got to celebrate a fantastic win with the team. And yeah, it was, but it's always daunting because I was 34 at the time, or coming into 34 at the time, and there's always that, could I get back, or do I even want to get back?
Well, so that's the obvious question. You know, you've come back. We've talked about the fact you wear your Port Adelaide top everywhere, so you've re-signed again. But you won another premiership this year. But as you say, you've got a wife. At times, a relationship split between two countries. Mm-hmm. You've got three young children. What was it that made you say, I'm going to come back and play again? Or did it not start as that? Did it just start as, I'm going to get my knee right and see what happens? Or what was the point where you thought, no, I've still got more in the tank here?
I think I needed a goal. I didn't go into my rehab thinking, we'll just wait and see, because I don't operate as well. I need to have an end goal that I needed to reach. And I still loved playing football, and I still felt that I could give more to the game. And I thought, if I could get my knee right again, that why couldn't I go again? And so I kind of early on made up my mind that I wanted to just at least get back to have the surgery, get back to America and reset, and then start head towards trying to get back to footy. And it was a pretty, although doing an ACL rehab is, you know, there's a lot of boring months, a lot of lonely months, but I still felt like I could still see the light at the end of the tunnel. I knew that I wanted to get back and play and also prove that I could still physically do it to myself as well and challenge myself.
You proved a lot at this stage though. Like you've won a couple of premierships, you've won Olympic silver medals, you've won in countries all around the world. Like, how much left is there to prove? Or is that you?
I think it's not to prove to anybody else. It's more to prove to me. Like I always said, I'm going to retire. And there's two things. It'll be if my body can't go anymore, or if I just don't love it. And I still love it, and my body, you know, I still feel can keep going now. You know, is there one or two more years? I hope so. But you know, even if it's just one more, I'm going to give it everything I have. I don't, you know, I still train really hard and put a lot of work into my body, and but I get a lot of satisfaction of just playing and being a part of a team and getting to go to training with a great group of women and have a great time and get to kick a ball around, you know, because I know that day is coming where I won't be able to be a part of it anymore. And so I kind of live my life with no regrets of just give it everything. So you can sit back and say, I don't have any regrets. I did everything that I could and gave it everything that I have.
How's your wife's understanding of footy?
Initially was pretty poor.
Fair enough, too.
But, you know, because she's grown up with NFL.
Yep.
And she absolutely loves football.
Right.
Loves it. Any game, like it's Thursday night footy. Yep. She's like, there's a game on tonight. Like she's completely converted. And she has said that if she was younger, she would have wanted to have played.
How good?
Well,
how
she good? Would have loved it.
Broader picture question for you. I need to let you go. How do you reckon we're going? So you've spent a lot of time playing in a lot of countries around the world, especially America, which is probably at the forefront of the development and support and financial return for women's sport. How do you reckon we're going here in Australia from an AFLW perspective and overall perspective? Is it heading in the right direction? Is the journey too slow? Are we going well? What do you reckon?
Look, I think the latest CBA is a massive win.
Yeah, AFLW CBA.
Yeah, absolutely.
Enormous increases.
Huge increase. And I think that only indicates it's going forward and it will end up in a fully professional sport for females. And I'm just grateful having been a part of the start of this and to be one of, you know, the many that are being a part of this incredible trajectory for this league. But it's heading in the right direction. Obviously, there's new teams this season. So to have a team in every club is just phenomenal. And so hopefully in the near future, we'll see obviously increased rounds, it becoming fully professional. But initially, I think it's just the growth has been incredible. You only have to go to these grassroots football level and see the amount of, you know, young females now kicking the ball around, participating in footy, the academies. There's academies now, different pathways to get here. So from my point of view, it's in an incredibly healthy position and hopefully keeps moving that way.
Two more questions for you. You're going to get the hardest one now.
Okay.
You can't avoid this one. So I have two children.
Okay.
That whoever's more invested in the athlete or person that comes on the show, they ask a question.
Okay.
So I've got a son and a daughter. You get my daughter.
Okay.
Who is 12. Her name is Sky. She loves her sport, but she operates as the pickle.
Okay.
My questions are very simple compared to hers, but she said she wants an answer.
Is this pineapple on pizza?
No. That'll come for you later.
Okay, good.
But if you answer that one wrong, then your episode might not go out. Righto.
Hi, Aaron. Pickle here. Well done on all your amazing achievements in sport. I can't believe you've won multiple AFLW grand finals and you've been to the Olympics. That's amazing. Now, what I want to know is if you could choose between footy or basketball, what would you choose? I sometimes have to choose between doing cross country and netball, and usually I choose cross country, but it's really hard. But you have to give me your real answer. What do you really think?
No sitting on the fences.
Wow.
Oh, I know. I told you. I ask the easy ones. I roll the big guns in for the hard questions.
It's like choosing your favourite child. You're not meant to, right?
I know, but at times she is. And hopefully my son's not listening to this particular part of the episode.
I would have to say there has been no greater honour or privilege to represent my country, to wear the green and gold, to be a dual Olympian and play for your country. So I'd have to say then basketball, definitely.
It's a great answer. Mm. I'll tell you didn't sit on the fence. She'll be happy with that.
No, we're sitting on the fence.
We always finish the show. We are blessed that a lot of kids listen to this. It's always my favourite part. It's great that you listen to the podcast. It makes me feel good.
Yep.
As a mother, you understand the weight of this question because you've got little ones with inquiring minds. For those out there that want to succeed in their field, you've had success in two fields and many others away from sport. What would you say to them, Erin?
I would say 100% enjoy your sport. You know, go out there for the right reasons, and that's to just give it everything you have. Enjoy what you do. Make mistakes and know that it's okay, because I still make plenty of them, even playing at the top level. And because, I've always been told, and my dad used to tell me and still tells me today, and I'm 37, that if you enjoy what you do, you'll do it well and you'll put all the energy and the effort into it and you'll want to master it naturally, and it never will feel like a job. So that is my biggest thing is enjoy it. And parents, embrace the kids that just want to go out there and enjoy it, and they'll naturally go down the path that they were meant to, and just support them.
Great advice. Would you advise them to wear their club polos just sort of around the traps or not?
I'm going to live this down. Yes, definitely. Hey, absolutely.
I was looking forward to so much to having you on the show, and even more so when I got a greater understanding of the depth of your achievements. The OAM sits beautifully next to your name. I look forward to seeing you play for Port Adelaide and whatever's next. You're a star. Thank you so much, Erin, for joining me on the Howie Games.
Thank you so much. Appreciate being here.
Now, there's your humble sporting superstar right there. It is going to be a huge moment when Erin runs out for Port Adelaide. Good luck to her. I can't thank Erin enough for coming on and being such a wonderful, warm guest. Thanks to the guru, Cam Roughhead at TLA for making it possible, to Das, MJ and Tommy for being the A-team, and as always, to you for listening. Peace and love.
And we can do it if we try, try, try. If we try, try, try. If we try, try, try.